Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also co-author of Heavy Lifting. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Bad, good, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Same martinis, just in a slightly different order, and you'll understand why as we go forward here. Jim, to a little surprise, one of our martinis today is the proposal from one Donald J. Trump to put an immediate stop to all immigration of Muslims into the United States. Here's how he read his own proclamation at a rally on Monday.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on. We have no choice. We have no choice.
Well, that's very specific language on the timetable there, Jim. As the day went forward, it turns out he would also apply that ban to American citizens who are overseas, who are Muslim, would not let them come back into the country until they figure out what's going on. That's his way of saying that this would not be an indefinite program necessarily. But Jim, when you look at the Constitution, and when you look at even how people like Dick Cheney, no friend to radical Muslims, are reacting to this, it could be very bad news for the party, especially at a time when it could muddy the waters on what we're trying to do to slow down the refugee importation.
Yeah, a lot to unpack here, Greg. For what it's worth, the initial question from reporters was, wait, so if you're a U.S. citizen who is Muslim, who is outside the country, whether you're going to a Hajj or you're going to visit Uncle Ali in Amman, Jordan or something like that, you try to come back into the country, we're not going to let you in. The initial response from the Trump staffers was, Mr. Trump means everyone. Now, a travel ban on U.S. citizens reentering the country strikes people as pretty glaringly unconstitutional. And in subsequent interviews with Greta Van Susteren and interviews this morning, Trump said it would not apply to U.S. citizens. Also, King Trump generously and magnanimously ruled that members of the armed services who are Muslim would also be allowed to return to the country. So we really should give him credit for being such a nice guy, Greg. You pointed out that Dick Cheney opposed this. That would be the legendarily soft-hearted, mushy, squishy Dick Cheney, who didn't really believe in fighting wars the tough way, as someone on Twitter argued with me earlier today. The question of constitutionality, which I have been arguing with, and very bright people have been saying to me, well, actually, Jim, technically the Constitution, under the Constitution, there's nothing saying that Congress cannot impose, we can oppose anybody from coming to the country we want. And if you want to say, well, wait a second, this violates the Constitution, the problem is that someone who is not a citizen or a green card holder, permanent resident, doesn't have the standing to challenge the constitutionality of the law in under the court system. Having said that, I really feel like the odds are really good that at least five justices would say, whoa, 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 whoa. The only time you see religion mentioned in the Constitution is the explicit renunciation of a religious test for any public office. And this was debated at the Constitutional Convention. And they decided against it because any religion realized they could end up being the minority and they could end up being barred from office if they allowed it. People arguing with me last night that the founding fathers who did not want a religious test for office would be perfectly fine with a religious test for citizenship. Now, that strikes me as just spectacularly wrongheaded, but that's the case. The second thing is that I look at this and say, wait a second. If you decree we no longer allow Muslims into this country, you cannot be a Muslim and be a U.S. citizen. That to me strikes me as, right there in the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law prohibiting the establishing a state religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. If you decree no more Muslims, that to me is barring the exercise of a religion. And I've had a lot of people arguing with me this morning about whether, Jim, they're trying to destroy us, Jim, with the threat, et cetera. Look, Sharia law is the real threat here, which is to say people who believe that the U.S. government should be overthrown and it should be replaced with a religious government, a religious-based system of courts, religious laws, that is the threat. And because it's not because you believe in Allah. It's not because you're praying to Mecca five times a day. It's because you believe that the secular U.S. government is not a legitimate authority. And that's what makes the person dangerous, not that they believe in Allah. And I'm just baffled and mystified by the sheer number of self-professed constitutional conservatives who cannot draw that distinction. I mean, ultimately, Greg, we have a significant chunk of the Republican Party, maybe Democratic Party too, for all we know, who really believe that Islam is incompatible with the values of the United States of America, and that ultimately, like, Trump said that he compared his proposal to FDR in the internment camps of the Japanese Americans during World War II. He said that he didn't know how he would react if he was in that circumstance in 1945. If you really believe, as Trump described, that Muslim Americans are full of hatred towards, you know, I can go back and check his exact wording because I want to make sure I don't want to get accused of misquoting him or being unfair to him. Quote, "There is great hatred towards Americans by large segments of the Muslim population." If you really believe that, Greg, why would you oppose internment camps?
The argument you're going to get back from Trump supporters or supporters of this policy, whether they like Trump or not, is looking at this particular couple. In every interview I've seen Trump give, everything he based on was on this one story from San Bernardino, which is a horrible story. And obviously the guy left the country, married a wife who was apparently radicalized some time ago and came back into the country. That's probably the premise for some of the things he's been saying. But as we get to the good martini here, there is a way to combat this without a complete shutdown on a number of people who would come into this country and probably not cause any trouble whatsoever in terms of destabilizing neighborhoods and causing security threats to the American people. Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse was in San Bernardino the night of the president's speech on Sunday evening, and he recorded a YouTube video that's only about 3 or 4 minutes long. I encourage folks to check it out online. This is just a brief excerpt of it, but it seems to me, Jim, to be a strong rebuttal of what Trump is saying without being weak in any sense on the threat that we face.
We are most certainly, though, at war with militant Islam. We are at war with violent Islam. We are at war with jihadi Islam. We are not at war with all Muslims. We're not at war with Muslim families in Dearborn, Michigan, who want the American dream for their kids. But we are at war with those who believe that they will kill in the name of religion. We are at war with militant or jihadi Islam, but we are not at war with people who believe in the American creed, which includes the right of everybody of every religion to freely worship and to freely speak and to freely assemble and argue.
Obviously not getting into specific policy there, but in terms of a template and a way to go forward, Ben Sasse seems to be hitting all the right notes.
Exactly the right tone. The contrast with the president's speech was terrific. Al Pundit over at Hot Air had summarized it very well. You notice the distinction between his address and Obama's address, Greg?
He knows who we're fighting?
Well, okay, yeah, there's a lot of differences there. But two things. One is, besides the fact that it's a very powerful image of Sasse speaking to the camera directly with the memorial behind him, but what's more is that Obama's speech is, here's what you should think. Ben Sasse's is, here's what I think. Right, it very much is, here are my values, here is how I see it, and it kind of invites the listener or the viewer to follow, right? Whereas Obama is, that as I expressed on Monday morning, his entire Sunday night tone was, you know, you Americans have disappointed me again, you are completely throwing away our values, this is not who we are. He always talks to us as if like he and Michelle have gone away for the weekend and we're the wayward teenager who's thrown a big party and now the house has been trashed and he's very disappointed in us. You know, he thought we had better judgment than this, which is a really ugly, you know, an unimpressive tone for a president. No, Sasse really nailed it, I think. And just to make an observation, like Sasse, you know, he was on the cover of National Review. We really liked him, the former university president. He's familiar. He knows these, you know, issues like even a healthcare company. He knows these issues backwards and forwards. I'm not saying Ben Sasse is going to run for president. He's not running for president this cycle. But if you get a vibe that this guy wants to be president someday, doing a video like this and being this good at it certainly does kind of fuel those suspicions. And I'll just point out that, you know, the last three cover boys for National Review, with time we've kind of spotlighted a young, relatively unknown rising star conservative were Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and Ben Sasse. So maybe I think there's a trend there, Greg.
Well, Ben Sasse is off to a pretty good start here in his first year in the Senate. He didn't give a floor speech for the longest time, finally gave his first one a few weeks ago, in which he essentially railed against both parties for being hated by the American people, for being corrupt, being tone deaf, and not providing the government that the American people deserve. So he's certainly off to a good start, and he gave a great defense of the freedom of religion there. I think a lot of the American people would also want not just the freedom of religion cherished by our political leaders, but everything in the Bill of Rights and in the First Amendment, including the freedom of speech, freedom of expression, and that means being critical of religion. There's a lot of pressure right now to not be publicly critical of Islam. We just saw the Attorney General say a few days ago that she's going to be on the lookout for speech that is negative towards Islam that she believes could end up spawning violence and so forth. Or there's obviously the controversy that continues over cartoons or other images of Muhammad. So the First Amendment needs to be defended, and this First Amendment definitely cuts both ways. On to the crazy martini now, and this still relates to San Bernardino. This is from Catherine Herridge over at Fox News. A $28,500 deposit was made to Syed Farouk's bank account from webbank.com on or about November 18th, some 2 weeks before he and his wife, Tashfeen Malik, carried out the San Bernardino massacre, a source close to the investigation told Fox News Monday. Investigators are exploring whether the transaction was a loan taken out by Farouk, who with his wife killed 14 and wounded 21 when they opened fire at a holiday lunch. The deposit came via Utah-based webbank.com, which describes itself as a leading provider of national consumer and commercial private label and bank card financing programs on a nationwide basis. On or about November 20th, Fox News is told Farouk converted $10,000 to cash and withdrew the money at a Union Bank branch in San Bernardino. Afterwards, in the days before the shooting, there were at least three transfers of $5,000 that appear to be to Farouk's mother. So, well, we just had the father yesterday saying, oh, yeah, he did tell me he was loyal to ISIS. And now we've got the mother involved, at least in financial transactions. Whether she knew what they were involving is yet to be determined here, Jim. But it certainly appears that the dispute at the holiday party doesn't seem to be what triggered all this.
You know, Greg, I listened to everything you said there. And my first thought is, boy, I hope he had a brutal interest rate. Who approved that loan? If it was indeed a loan, right? I mean, as soon as you see a giant transfer of funds right before somebody goes on a shooting spree that appears to have an Islamist motive, you start wondering, okay, is this from some foreign source overseas? Whether is it from ISIS Central? Is it from some well-founded Middle Eastern billionaire or millionaire who wants to fund the jihad? You know, where does this money lead to? If it's a loan, Greg, I feel really lousy about all the paperwork I had to fill out for the mortgage. Right? I mean, you got to, 14 pieces of paper for a car loan. But, this guy, take the 28 grand. Go ahead. Yeah, you're good for it, right? Okay? Yeah. Boy, he sped away fast in that black SUV. But, did he apply during the height of the mortgage in the late Bush years thing? Was this an adjustable rate, type loan or something? Yeah. For anybody who's looking for a way to get cash for the holidays. Well, apparently there's at least one bank that's really easygoing on this sort of thing. One more really awful line for anybody who watched cable during the Bush years. Right now, that guy who kept yelling, lost another loan to Ditech, doesn't feel so bad anymore now, does he?
What shoe will drop next? And just how many family members were involved with this is going to be an interesting question to answer. Jim, on that note, we'll call it for today and reconvene again on Wednesday.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.